1, 2, 3, 4. Some might be offended that I'm sharing the secret. I'll make an exception because I think you'll keep it. What I'm telling you's true. Cross my heart, hope to die. What have you got to lose? Why would I lie?
Hello and welcome to We Always Lie to Strangers, a podcast about Ozarks history, folklore, and beyond. My name is Sharp Woolston.
I'm Daniel Smiley.
I'm Gus Carlson.
And I'm Raymond Mathis.
And we might always lie to strangers, but not on this show because we're all friends here. Thank you for joining us. Today's yarn begins on December 2nd, 1873, near Fort Gibson in the Cherokee Nation of the Indian Territory. The history of Fort Gibson is in and of itself very interesting, but not the primary focus of this episode. When Fort Gibson was established in 1824, it was the furthest west military outpost at the time, and a town grew around it.
In the shape of a Les Paul.
Now we just do that with Sonics.
Did you say with Sonics?
Yeah.
We just build a Sonic and a town grows around it.
Yeah, the Sonic shows that something's about to come, and the Dollar General is how you know it's a town.
Yeah.
How you know it's came.
I mean, I feel like the DG's first.
I would argue that a Sonic and a Dollar General toss up. Belfont, I believe, has the Sonic and a Dollar General.
Yeah, but you know, St. Paul's got the DG, but they don't, you know, they have the Snack Shack, but no Sonic yet.
Jasper doesn't have a Sonic, but it does have a Dollar General.
Oh.
But it has a Subway, so we got a new wrinkle.
Fuck Subway.
Subway isn't very good.
It's terrible. No.
The Les Paul joke went over my head.
That was great. I loved the Les Paul joke. I missed Gus's joke because I was laughing at the Les Paul joke. So I'm glad we circled back to the Sonic joke so we could get in those bits.
It's good that we got more Paul.
Fort Gibson borders the Neosho River only about a mile after its confluence with the Arkansas River, which is only about a mile downstream from the confluence of the Arkansas and the Verdigris River. Part of this is for Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Water talk, because I consider the Neosho River to be the western boundary of the Ozarks. And then the Three Forks area over there that I just mentioned, with the two river confluences, is the area of Oklahoma where the Ozark Mountains to the east transition into the plains and sandstone hills of the west. And this is where Henry Starr was born. Henry Starr's parents were named George Starr, who is known as Hop, and his mother was Mary Scott Starr.
So is Hop a nickname that you get from like an action, or is it a condensed name?
I mean, George to Hop.
Hopwell?
Is he just called Hop because he hops, you know? Like, is he a hopper?
Good question.
I don't know. I didn't find any etymology for the...
Because I know nicknames can go some strange routes as far as, like, a name becoming a different one, but hops from George is I feel like it's...
Yeah, well, because, I mean, I feel like most nicknames are pretty spot on, like Liver-Eating Johnson, which is unfortunately a non-Ozarkian. But Hop, that's one that doesn't have to be literal. So Henry's father, George, or Hop, was half Cherokee, and his mother was a quarter Cherokee and Irish as well. So the Starrs, so his father's family, were notorious for having a large number of outlaws. His grandfather, Tom Starr, was an outlaw. And then beyond that, his Uncle Sam... And his...
the titular one.
Sam. In fact. Uncle Sam. That went past me.
Uncle Sam Starr and his wife, Belle Starr, the outlaw queen.
The bandit queen.
Sam Starr does seem like it would be the canonical name of like Uncle Sam. Like his last name, Starr, too.
That is a good point.
His dog name is Stripes.
Okay, so Belle Starr is his aunt.
Through marriage.
See, I'm going to admit, so Belle Starr, much more famous, River Valley, Fort Smith, But I 100% thought Henry Starr was a son. I did not realize that it's just a random
nephew. Yeah, and like I said, through marriage, Henry wasn't fond of Belle and made it a point when the connection was made between the two of them to point out that they were only related through marriage.
Very violent cousin walk at that Thanksgiving dinner.
Is he just mad that, like, she was more famous?
I think he...
Or is he just a misogynist?
I mean, there might be a little bit of that, but he also wasn't very fond of people that had no native blood.
Mm.
And I don't believe Belle Starr had any native blood.
No, I don't think she did.
But in 1886, so Henry would have been 14, Sam Starr was killed in a gunfight. And Belle Starr remarried a man named Frank West, and then she's gone from the story after that.
Okay. And then great.
That same year, but you have to mention their connection. That same year, Henry's father died, and a few months later, Henry left home.
Like, how old is he?
14.
Yeah, it's about time. It's about time.
I mean, it's 1886. It happens.
Also, you're going into bandit life. There's not, like, you know, there's not the GED of banditry.
True.
Start whenever.
When Henry was 16, while working in Nevada in the Indian Territory, which is about 20 miles north of Tulsa, he was driving a wagon into town when two deputy marshals found whiskey in the wagon and had him arrested for, quote, introducing spirits to the territory. He claimed to have borrowed the wagon without knowing there was whiskey in it. Then when he was...
It wasn't mine. I was just holding it.
Then when he was 18, he was arrested for stealing a horse, which he denied, and was sent to Fort Smith and jailed.
I hope he was on the horse when they were like, you stole this. And he's like, no.
No.
I didn't. This horse stole me.
Beautiful horse. Just look her in the mouth.
Whoa.
Look a gift horse in the mouth, you know.
I know.
So after this arrest in Fort Smith, a cousin paid his bail. And after two arrests that he claimed were both false, he decided to become an outlaw. Pretty much immediately after this release from jail, he started robbing stores and railroad depots in northeastern Oklahoma. Two deputy marshals were given a warrant for his arrest for jumping bail. They were named Henry Dickey and Floyd Wilson.
Names were just better back then.
Just you wait. In December of 1892, they had pinpointed the area they believed he was hiding out. And one night when the marshals were eating dinner, a ranch owner named Arthur Dodge said he had seen Henry Starr that day. Floyd Wilson immediately left to pursue Henry and go to the area that he was seen, while Henry Dickey had to wait because his horse wasn't saddled. Floyd Wilson found Starr, and a gunfight ensued, which led to Wilson's death. Now the pressure to find Henry Starr increased, and he continued to rob stores and railway depots.
Okay.
Now, is he still denying everything? Like, this is like, no, this just circumstance keeps happening.
She shot first. I was hunting.
My gun went off. I don't know.
I think it's a thing where outlaws are, like, we're kind of in, like, the end of the Wild West period. So you got to keep in mind that outlaws are a big deal and are bona fide celebrities at this time frame.
You said it's 1892, right?
Yeah, the next sentence is 1893.
Okay, so I was like, when did it become Oklahoma? And so 1890, it becomes Oklahoma Territory. Does that mean Fort Smith isn't the capital at this point?
I don't know
how any of this works. I don't know Okie history.
Part of what you're asking gets I have in the script.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, just hang on a little bit. I actually don't have an exact time, which is kind of frustrating. But
1907 is when it becomes a state. I have that date for you.
Keep that in mind. In March 1893, joining up with a man named Frank Cheney, Henry robbed...
Dick's grandchild.
You mean grandfather?
no.
Robbed his first
no,
bank
he's that old.
In Caney, Kansas, followed shortly thereafter with their first robbing of a passenger train.
And okay.
Yeah.
This seems late to be robbing. Like, the 1890s seemed late to be robbing trains.
Now, I was just at Silver Dollar City and our train got robbed, and that was just a couple months ago.
Did y'all hear about that train derailing
at Silver Dollar
City last year?
Yeah.
Like, people got injured.
Terrifying.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure my grandma and my aunt were at Silver Dollar City that day, but left before the train derailment happened.
What do you think they got?
What do you mean? Like, settlement?
Yeah. Do you think they got a settlement, or do you think they just got season passes?
I don't know. Hopefully they took them to the Branson Hospital on a different train, though.
Well, if dog patch is any indicator, they gave the victim the theme park.
That was a good reference. Audience, Google that if you don't know it.
On June 5th, 1893, Starr and Cheney, along with four more gang members, here's your great names, Gus.
All right, let's hear them.
Link Coupland, Happy Jack, Hank Watt, and Kid Wilson prepared.
See, they just sound great to go on a wanted poster. And names just don't really do that anymore, except, you know, Sharp, you've got a good wanted poster name.
Sharp Wilson, yeah.
Yeah.
On June 5th. So we've just brought
up. So
he's
killed a man, he's robbed a freaking train.
And now he has a gang with Frank
but
Cheney.
But he did not steal a horse.
He didn't steal a horse.
He did, yes.
The horse joined him willingly. It's a part of the gang.
So Starr, Cheney, Link Coupland, Happy Jack, Hank Watt, and Kid Wilson prepared to rob the People's Bank of Bentonville, Arkansas.
Well, it's certainly not called that now.
No, I'm pretty sure that wasn't that Alice Walton's bank that she had? That was very successful.
The People's Bank?
The Person's Bank.
So Starr had cased the town the day before and had rented a wagon to drive through town to transport weapons without drawing suspicion. However, due to his string of robberies and the murder of a deputy marshal over the previous year and a half, Starr was infamous and people easily recognized him. Happy Jack waited outside near the bank with getaway horses. And then Link Coupland
joined willingly, not stolen.
You know, borrowed. We don't know. And then Link Coupland guarded the door while the rest of the men went inside to rob the bank. From the beginning, before the robbery started, townsfolk knew that a bank robbery was happening, and the sheriff, Pierce Goldbraith, was alerted. So he ran to the scene and started shooting at Happy Jack, who had the horses, who, quote, hopped from foot to foot trying to dodge the bullets but managed to keep hold of the horses.
So he only shot the person not actively committing a crime. Because, like, hanging out outside of a bank with horses is actually legal.
I mean, is it?
I don't know. It is in Bentonville, so who knows?
So at this point, with the sheriff firing on Happy Jack with the horses, citizens had joined to fight the bank robbers. And hearing the emerging gun battle outside, Starr and the rest of the men fled the bank, but took bank employees with them as hostages to act as human shields.
Classic.
In the chaos, the hostages all escaped, and the Starr gang was forced out of town. Link Coupland was wounded, as well as two civilians, but no one was killed.
Okay. Do we know who shot the civilians?
No, I mean, it could have been friendly fire. Some
dudes got shot.
Yes. Sheriff Goldbraith organized a posse and couldn't locate the gang who were hiding in the Indian Territory. Because of the mounting pressure after this failed bank robbery, the gang decided to split up and Starr and Kid Wilson decided to flee to California. On the way, they stopped in Colorado Springs, where Starr, being a notorious outlaw, was arrested and sent back to Fort Smith for trial.
So he had a good run, though. Like, that was a couple years, couple bank robberies, train, dead deputy, some dead lawman. He had a pretty good run.
So, where am I? I lost my spot.
Sent him back to Fort Smith.
All right, so Starr's trial surrounded his robberies, but more importantly, the murder of Deputy Marshal Floyd Wilson. Starr was found guilty by the hanging judge, Judge Isaac Parker, and was, as you may have guessed, sentenced to hang. Starr's lawyers were able to successfully appeal, first getting the hanging sentence overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, before a jurisdictional realignment saw Judge Parker lose control of the Indian Territory. So okay. this was like pre-statehood, but this is when Fort Smith
stopped being the that
it
must
wasn't
have been
just
when
it... Judge Parker. It was all of this stuff shifting.
Did any of y'all ever go to Judge Parker's courtroom when they had like the gallows that you could play on?
No.
Yeah, they used to. They don't let you get. They're still there, but like you used to be able to like get on the scaffolding. And it's just like, yeah, this is where we executed a bunch of people. It's run by I guess State Park probably. I don't know. There's people that have the hats when you go there.
So after Judge Parker lost control of the Indian Territory, the government wanted to quickly settle cases because of the realignment and struck a deal for a 15-year prison sentence on three charges for Henry Starr: manslaughter, robbery, and train robbery.
I will have you know, no horse theft
and no murder.
Yeah, I was going to say getting manslaughter for killing a deputy in a shootout is a hell of a plea deal.
Well, I mean, the government was just trying to get it cleaned up. Now,
hanging from you're going to be hung, or sorry, hanged. yeah, anyways.
So while Henry Starr was awaiting trial, I wasn't clear if this was the initial trial or the retrial, a fellow prisoner in Fort Smith was an outlaw named Crawford Goldsby, who was also known as Cherokee Bill.
Two very different names.
Just two great names. You got
his legal name is Cherokee William.
I'm googling Cherokee Bill though. He's kind of goofy. He's kind of goofy looking if you see the pictures of him.
He is a little goofy looking. Cherokee Bill was young and known for his violence and was sometimes called the terror of the Indian Territory. While incarcerated together, Cherokee Bill had had a trustee smuggle him in a gun so that he could attempt a jailbreak. A gunfight broke out between Cherokee Bill and the guards, one of whom was killed. During the standoff, Starr, who had previously been an acquaintance of Cherokee Bill's, told the guards he would disarm Cherokee Bill if the guards promised not to kill Cherokee Bill afterwards. Starr was able to talk Cherokee Bill into giving him the gun, and Starr gave it to the guards. Cherokee Bill would later go on to be hanged in Fort Smith after his conviction from the hanging judge, Isaac Barker, at only the age of 20.
Do you think that Henry Starr is just like, nah, don't worry, dude, 15 years max, it'll be manslaughter?
That's probably true. Also, so Cherokee Bill probably isn't getting 15 years because it says his dad was a Buffalo soldier, which means was of African-American ancestry, and his mother was a Cherokee freedwoman of mixed African Native and white ancestry.
I believe Cherokee Bill had killed like 12 or 13 people also.
Yeah, there are pictures of him posing with the guys who captured him. Just like, oh, you got me.
So he killed that many people before the age of 20?
Yeah.
Jesus.
How many people did you kill before the age of 20?
None that I'm aware of.
Just broke some hearts.
I'm sure there was some butterfly effect shit that happened. Like, I merged on the interstate and somebody died 20 minutes later. But.
Damn.
What? You guys did it too.
I guess so.
Get off your fucking high stolen horse.
Not stolen. Join me willingly.
So in 1901, almost a decade after the initial arrest, Starr applied for a pardon. Starr had been a model prisoner, not to mention his help with the Cherokee Bill standoff, so Starr had his sentence commuted by none other than President Teddy Roosevelt and was released from federal prison in January of 1903.
The problem here, though, is we're switching from, like, badass to kind of a kiss-ass.
Fair.
Well, after Henry Starr was released, he decided to go straight. He got married, and he had a son named Theodore Roosevelt Starr. And he worked in Tulsa. But then the Arkansas authorities found out that he had been released, and they tried to get him extradited back to Arkansas for the Bentonville bank robbery.
Mm.
So he went on the run again and ended up reuniting with his old gangmates. In 1908, Starr robbed some banks in Kansas and Colorado with the gang before they separated again. And then while he was hiding out in Arizona, he was arrested and sent to Colorado to serve 25 years for bank robbery in Colorado. An exemplary prisoner always, Starr was paroled in 1913, after 5 years, where he was required to remain in the state of Colorado and report regularly to the parole board. Instead, he re-entered Oklahoma and went on a string of 14 bank robberies over the course of 5 months, which prompted the Oklahoma State legislator to pass the bank robber bill, which approved a $15,000 reward for the capture of a bank robber. The string of robberies were broken when Starr and six other men attempted to rob two banks simultaneously in Stroud, Oklahoma. Starr was captured and wounded, and after his recovery was sentenced to 25 years.
Two banks at one time.
That's one time.
You're just getting greedy. You're getting playing it loose and fast.
Well, you hit 14 straight, and you're like, how do we go from here?
It was probably a bit of a heat check.
Yeah,
it's like, how do we make this fun for us again? You know, we've got an old hat at it.
I mean, probably. And, you know, you're in Stroud, Oklahoma. I can't imagine there's much more going on there than robbing banks. Why don't you Goog that real quick, Raymond? What Stroud looks like.
What to do and things to do and for and what's it called? I want to make everything a
Fort Stroud.
No, it's just Stroud. Stroud, Oklahoma.
Fort Stroud.
Not Fort, just Stroud.
Oklahoma. The essential. Let me tell you the essential Stroud. That would be the Stable Ridge Vineyards. So it's obviously
Oklahoma wine.
Wine country.
That's awesome.
So this story, I'm going to take a little brief detour in the Henry Starr story to tell the story mostly of Bill Tillman.
I don't believe it's going to be brief.
Yeah, it's two paragraphs. So Bill Tillman. Tillman had previously been a member of the Three Guardsmen along with Chris Madsen and Heck Thomas, who were a trio of deputy marshals who were tasked with cleaning up, quote, the Indian Territory and combined for over 300 arrests under the jurisdiction of the hanging judge, Isaac Parker. Tillman is most famous for his run-ins with the Doolin Dalton Gang, also known as the Wild Bunch, and his most famous moment as a marshal was tracking down and arresting Wild Bunch leader Bill Doolin in a bathhouse in Eureka Springs.
Nice. In my mind, these are just battling a cappella groups. You've got the Three Guardsmen versus the Wild Bunch. I love it.
They're competing Branson theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah. One's where the Presleys is and the other's where the Ball Number Jamboree is.
Yeah.
Tillman's other famous move in this period was after his annoyance of thinking Hollywood was incorrectly depicting lawmen and westerns, started a film company called Eagle Film Company and made a film titled Passing of the Oklahoma Outlaws. He cast real deputy marshals as themselves, including Chris Madsen, one of the other three guardsmen, and they reenacted various experiences from their careers as marshals. Henry Starr had a bit part in this film. And then most of this film is now missing, but about 13 minutes remain and can be found on YouTube. While this is going on with Tillman, Starr was in prison and was starting to say that he regretted his life decisions. A model prisoner as always, his words of regret plus his wounds from the Stroud prison robbery, which wouldn't let him, he didn't have a full range of movement. I didn't write down, and I can't remember what it was, but I think he might not have been able to run, or maybe he didn't have full movement of his arms. So with his regret plus the injuries, he was released from prison, not viewed as a threat to society.
Okay. He doesn't have a history of any of this.
No, not at all. But in 1919, Starr produced and starred in A Debtor to the Law, a now entirely lost silent film about the Stroud bank robberies, playing himself.
Now, for accuracy, do they think they got any of, like, the people, like, they get the bank cashier in there, too? And, like, hey, relive this probably really stressful day. Some real, like, method acting kind of approach.
You know they, like, watched it in the town, though. Like, they had to, like, put it on.
Oh, yeah.
Matinee.
I didn't see anything about who Henry Starr was casting in his films, but Tillman definitely used as many people that were involved in things as he could.
I mean, that's kind of cool in a historical kind of record sort of way.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of like people getting local extras for movies and stuff, but but this isn't that. This is
none of us were on True Detective.
Right. I wasn't.
Yeah, I wasn't.
So Henry's stars film A Debtor to the Law was a success, and then he starred in several more westerns, almost always playing himself. He was also offered a chance to move to Hollywood to make pictures, but since he had still not been convicted for the Bentonville bank robbery, he was worried that if he moved to California, Arkansas would try to extradite him back again. So he decided to stay in Oklahoma. And now our big climax. On February 18th, 1921, Henry Starr and three unnamed sidekicks drove to Harrison, Arkansas in a touring car and drove around the perimeter of the town to cut down communication wires.
Dicks.
They then went to the People's National Bank with one man waiting outside in the car. The two other men
waited. Do you think they cracked the window?
Yeah, and he's got a cigarette. So the two other men waited by the front doors and Starr ordered a cashier to open the safe. While this is happening, a customer entered the bank. And so the two men at guard at the front door got distracted, and the former president of the bank, W.J. Myers, quickly ran to a vault where a rifle was hidden in case of a robbery and shot one shot at Henry Starr, who was monitoring the emptying of the safe. The bullet entered from his kind of backside area and hit his spine, and it immediately partially paralyzed Starr. And as he fell down, he yelled that he was done for and told his comrades to escape, which they did. Myers exited the bank with the same rifle he had used to shoot Henry Starr and fired toward the car, puncturing a tire and dodging fire that was coming back from the car. A posse gave chase and eventually found the car on the side of the road where it had been abandoned and set ablaze, but the men were never found.
Guess what
they got? So they got the money then, right? It was
I don't think they got the money. Oh. Because they were all guarding outside.
Well, they're in the process of cracking the safe too.
They
right?
didn't quit.
I wonder which way out of town they went.
In my personal vision, for whatever reason, they go out 43, and then they cut by Quail Tree, and then they get on
which
Road.
Was still there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Quail Tree was there and closed, of course. But
right.
So Grub Star Springs.
Starr was taken.
They just went community they went straight building. To the ramps.
Oh, I mean, Grub Springs was there at the time.
You thought I was? You thought I would lie to you? I always heard that he like there's a whole, like you can see the gunshot, in like the alleyway by Harrison Daily Times.
Yeah, my grandma took me there before.
But if he was shot guard like opening the thing, why? Unless that used to be the bank, and then they took it out and put in that alleyway.
Well, it sounds like there was a whole shootout after the fact.
Yeah,
too.
I think,
good point.
I think that's the post-robbery shootout. So Starr was taken to the county jail, where a physician removed the bullet. He told the doctors present, "I've robbed more banks than any man in the United States."
Is that true?
I'm pretty sure that his streak of the 14 banks in 2 months is regarded as like a pretty impressive feat.
I mean, yeah,
for bank robbers.
That's
I'm not discounting that he's not an impressive bank robber. I'm just saying, is he actually the
Jesus, Gus?
Listen, we want to be accurate here. I support you, Gus.
That is Henry Starr's quote. "I've robbed more banks than any man in the United States." Let him believe it. He's dying.
Yeah,
that's true.
He was visited by his
third
wife.
He never stole a horse. He never, you know.
Never stole a horse, but he stole the hell out of money from banks.
There we go.
He was visited by his third wife, his son, and his mother before dying 4 days after the bank robbery on February 22nd, 1921. And when he died without ever giving up the names of the men that had been with him.
Nice.
All right.
Do you think he died at Boone County Regional?
I think he died
it was still there.
I'm pretty sure he died in the county jail, wherever the county jail was in 1921.
I've been to Boone County Jail.
Have you?
Yeah, just once.
They took us on a field trip to it.
And
no, I was there against my will.
I mean, so was Gus on the field trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
It was not a great field trip.
I've not been to Boone County Jail.
And then they took us to a McDonald's and we watched the training video. That was the field trips we got in Jasper High. I'm not even remotely kidding on that.
Jasper High in Newton County went to Boone County Jail. And
or I guess it was Jasper Elementary. No, it was the elementary year, sorry. Because I got
know
a
they
cool
don't
Spider-Man
have,
happy.
They don't have a McDonald's or a Sonic.
Did you get to go into the caboose?
Yes, we did get to go.
Nice.
Into the
caboose.
Hell yeah.
This episode brought to you by there. McDonald's.
No, it's just the,
only the Harrison
by the
one.
Caboose at McDonald's.
I'm sure we'll tell stupid stories later, but my dad and his brother used to routinely get arrested in Boone County in their younger years, normally for being drunk. So one of the things that they would do is they had to clean. They would like go tidy up Maplewood Cemetery, the big cemetery in Harrison, mm-hmm. and. They, because this happened enough, you know, where they like have to spend a weekend or whatever, if one of them was in and the other one was out, they would hide joints at a specific grave in Maplewood. And he's like, yeah, in those days you could smoke in jail, you could have your own cigarettes. And so they just put it in their pack and go back to the jail. And that's then late awesome at night, great. They'd just be passing around the doobie. That's only one of his stories. I'll save the other one in the back pocket for later.
So Henry Starr never made it to a talking picture, right? He only was in silent films.
Yeah,
because we could have had like our first like introduction to the Ozark accent for the world otherwise. But
yeah, and I don't think any of Henry Starr's films survived.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just that 13 minutes of the.
Oh yeah, and I don't even think he's. I don't even think he's really
in that 13 minutes.
I don't think he is. Well, because honestly, oh, wow. I didn't put this in the script, but the sources I used weren't. Not all of them thought he was in the film.
Gotcha.
Passing of the Oklahoma Outlaws, but one of them, the one that I took most of the information about Tillman was. Is the one that said he was in it, so I was like, that's good enough mm-hmm. for me. Yeah, and if you go to Henry Starr's IMDb page, A Debtor to the Law is the only film that he's on, and it has 6.5 out of 10 stars on 20 ratings, but it's a lost film. This has been We Always Lie to Strangers. We'll see you next time if anyone has anything to say. All right, they don't.
Party forever.
Talk to y'all later.
Bye. Bye.
Hello, it's Sharp. I'm here with the sources. From the legendsofamerica.com website, we've got Henry Starr, the Cherokee bad boy, Belle Starr, the bandit queen, and Bill Tillman, long-term lawman. Then we've got the book Ozark, Gunfighters, and Other Notorious Incidents by Larry Wood. And then we've got multiple pages from both the Encyclopedia of Arkansas and the Encyclopedia of Oklahoma History and Culture, including Henry Starr, Crawford Goldsby, Bell Starr, Benton County, Arkansas. And, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.